And a good Sunday morning. My name is Susie Jones. It is cold outside. I just want to say that. Good morning. Happy to have you. Happy to have Josh at the helm this morning. Good morning, Josh. How are you? Everything okay over there?
I'm good. It's cold outside.
It is 26 degrees outside. That's just like jarring. Weren't we just like at 70 a couple of days ago? Not too.
We were. We'll be back up to the 40s and 50s next week, though.
Oh, well, that'll be
something.
Yeah,
some positivity.
Yes, my mother wanted me to, my 92-year-old mother wanted me to help her with her yard work yesterday. And I was like, Mom, can we wait?
I think that was on the docket for a lot of people this weekend.
Yeah, I was like, can I please wait? But, you know, she is a shining example of what we're going to talk about this hour. She
Perfect.
Is my mother. She is older than I am, obviously. She's still in her own home. She's still in good shape. And she likes to walk. She's very active. She loves to take part in church. That's a big part of her life. And we talked a little earlier about aging. How do you age? You know, how old are you?
I am just turned 31.
And I'm 60. So the older you get, the more your body changes and, you mm-hmm. know, creaks. And people automatically say, oh, I have an ache or a pain. I'm going to take a pill. And as we do get older, a lot of people have a lot of different pills that they're on for this thing or that thing. And many people, even seniors, actually don't need to be on as many medications as they are. And we are happy to have with us on our newsline, our John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Minnesota doctor Nick Schoeman. He is a specialist in polyprescribing and de-prescribing or re-prescribing so that people aren't on as many medications. It happens a lot when someone will get one medication from one doctor and then another one from a specialist and so on before they have a table full of medications that can get confusing. So Dr. Nick, thanks for coming on with us. Really, really appreciate it. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's chilly. I hope you're ready for a nice run or walk this morning. Bundle up.
Just filled in my cup of coffee up.
Well, I mentioned my mother as you were listening, and, you know, she really is a blessing in that not a lot of people kind of get to 90, 93, 95 on their own, in their own home. But it's something to shoot for, and I know that's what you guys do at LifeSpark, right, is to help people have independent, magnificent lives into their older years, right?
You're spot on.
So what do you do for people? Do they come to you? How do they arrive to you, and how do you help them with their medications?
Well, should we talk about polypharmacy to start here?
Polypharmacy. And let me just say before we go, because I was talking to my mom about having you on last night, and she said, make sure you say the phone number, because people do like to jump in and ask questions. So it's 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Again, Dr. Nick with LifeSpark. If you have a question and you want to jump in, do so. But we'll start with this issue of polyprescribing. Is that right?
Right. The three terms I guess I'd like to communicate to the CCO listeners out there is the terms polypharmacy, drug cascading, and deprescribing. So let's start off with polypharmacy. There's really no strict definition in a health exam or something for what polypharmacy is, but in general, it just means taking more than one medication. And in our profession, it generally means, you know, more than 5 or 10. And importantly, many of those medications may be of low value, Susie. In other words, the risks of taking them clearly outweigh the benefits. So that's what we mean by polypharmacy, and it has become a very common thing in American medicine.
How do you know if you're in that situation?
It's hard to know, right? And I think it's because people trust their doctors, right? And these things are done thoughtfully and often tied to guidelines based on subspecialty organizations and organ system thinking, like a cardiac specialist, a kidney doctor, pulmonary, things like that. So it's not random. These things are very done thoughtfully. But at the end of the day, our siloed healthcare system doesn't really integrate all the different prescribers in a way that adds up to a safe plan. So, you know, I think there's probably four main reasons why we see polypharmacy exploding in the last couple of decades. And one is that siloed organ system approach that I just described. Multiple different prescribers in different subspecialties where the patient is really referred around, and there's not great integration of the plan. And I don't want to be too critical of primary care docs because they're wonderful. But in a fee-for-service kind of transactional system that we have in most of the country, it's tough to take a medication list of 10 or 15 different drugs prescribed by maybe four or five different physicians or physician assistants or nurse practitioners and really make sense of it in a brief visit. So that's a big part of the problem. The second part would be the tendency for Americans, at least historically, to really want something out of that transactional 10 or 15 minute office visit. And the belief that maybe there is, you were stating that at the top of the hour here, that the belief that there is a pill for everything that's going to fix my problems.
Yeah.
Then on the flip, on the delivery side, you know, people that go into healthcare have a tendency to want to help people. And there's a really kind of deep need to do something that's in our veins. And so it maybe there's a tendency to want to give somebody something too when they come in, and that biases the interaction a little bit. And the last thing I'll say about the root causes of polypharmacy here is that the pharmaceutical industry's marketing techniques have been very successful.
You know, I'll say.
Yeah. I mean, there's direct-to-consumer advertising in this country that is not common in other parts of the world. But also, importantly, physicians have been influenced often through illegal marketing techniques over the past few decades. And probably the most egregious example of that is treating patients that have behavioral disorders related to dementia or cognitive impairment with antipsychotics. Mm. It became the norm. All the companies that did these illegal marketing techniques at conferences and other different methods to get into physicians' mindsets, they all paid huge fines, but at the end of the day, it worked for their business plans. And those medications are still the go-to drugs for people that have neuropsychiatric symptoms of dementia.
651-461-9226. That's the number to call if you have a comment or a question for Dr. Nick. We're talking about a couple of different things here this morning. We're talking about de-prescribing, drug cascading, as so many people in this country, even not just old people, but everybody, seems to be getting prescribed something for something. And in some cases, obviously, as you said, they are good medications. You just can, I suppose, get into some trouble if they interact differently with one another, what have you. So we're going to talk to listeners and continue our conversation with Dr. Nick right after this. It's 721 on News Talk 830 WCCO. And we are back. It is 724 on a Sunday morning. 651-461-9226. That's our talk and text line. If you have a comment or a question or just want to jump in and share your thoughts, I got this one just a second ago. Josh, 7 a.m., 25 degrees in Montrose, Minnesota.
I believe it.
Holy cow. Makes us hearty, though. That's what I heard.
Oh, yeah.
We have Dr. Nick on our news line. He's with LifeSpark, and we're talking about these, all the medications that people talk, and we want you to jump in as well if you're listening. Maybe you are taking these meds, or maybe people that love you are watching you with this. A texter writes this morning, Dr. Nick, went through this scenario with our mom. She had a great provider who pared down her meds. I think she has an issue now with medications is the lack of communication between providers and productivity models. Kind of address that, because a lot of us, maybe it's not us, but maybe we're watching our mom or dad or some loved one and look at all that medicine. What can we do to help, or what questions should we ask, if any?
Well, I think advocate for your mom or dad or yourself is certainly an important thing. And I did hear, I guess, in your voice there that somebody had a good experience with a primary care physician taking the time to pare down medications and talk about the risk benefits. And that's really a joyful experience for people caring for seniors. And I've seen that happen many times. People on less medications can function better, think better, and feel better for sure. So I'm glad to hear that. But, yeah. Advocating for your loved ones is super important. And one piece of advice I would actually give the listeners is to schedule an appointment specifically around looking at the risk and benefits of every medication for yourself or your loved ones, so that the physician can prepare and know what the visit is about. And not just slide it in when you're in with, for a different concern or one of your routine follow-ups.
And a primary doctor can do that for you?
They certainly can. It's not something that is highly valued by our current fee-for-service system. To do it well is, again, very difficult to do in a 10 or 15-minute office visit. Some of the value-based systems around the country employ pharmacists to help with that. I don't see that a lot in the metro yet, but I think that's coming our way, so that they can help prepare the doctor and be a collaborating partner with the doctor to intelligently look at the med list. But I think it's a skill set that needs more training and muscle building, that's for sure.
And this is, it goes without saying, I think, doctor, that you should not do this on your own. You should not say, well, I think I'm just going to taper off because this is what I heard the doctor say on the radio. That is a bad, bad, bad idea.
Absolutely.
Talk about that.
Yeah, these are very complex decisions. And people got to these, robust and deep medication lists for a reason. So you have to think it through, because there are risks in stopping medications, and sometimes I will stop them quickly if the situation meets the need, like there's really lots of confusion and falling and low blood pressures and other things going on. Other times we do it very slowly and thoughtfully over, maybe a 3 to 6 month period. So it has to really fit the situation. So I would not do that on your own, that's for sure. And how you stop medications is super important too. Some can be just stopped cold turkey safely, and others really need to be weaned slowly, or you may get into trouble.
And what kind of trouble? I mean, what are you talking about in some cases?
Oh, like, let's say, beta blockers. If you stop those quickly, you might get very tachycardic. And
what's tachycardic? You're talking doctor talk.
fast heart rate and induce some chest pain or cardiac symptoms.
Okay.
There are other medications that might cause seizures if you stop them cold turkey. So, you definitely want to have a professional involved in your de-prescribing plan.
I wanted to ask about the pharmacist. So I take myself, I don't care, I'll just tell you because you're a doctor. Because they always ask, everywhere you go, what are you on? So I have Paxil and Trazodone, two things I take regularly, daily. And my question, my pharmacist said the other day, and I've been doing this for a long, long time, and he said, well, there could be a reaction between those two. So in this case, I'm telling you that, but a pharmacist also has kind of a role in if they see two drugs together that don't make sense or are potentially dangerous. They're saying things too. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yes, and I'm a big proponent of pharmacists getting involved in the game here. But the way it currently stands is not optimal. I mean, pharmacists are out siloed. They're not really working very carefully with primary care providers or subspecialists. So I think we need to bring them into the team more. And it's not that I don't value their education and training. It's you need to have the whole person context of the patient to really give expert advice. So you need to know what their prognosis is, what their personal values are. Are they more interested in quantity of life or quality of life? What is the time to benefit for the Medicaid? There's just a lot of things that go into making these decisions that this shouldn't just be farmed out to a pharmacist. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be done in a very collaborative fashion.
651-461-9226. If you have a comment or a question and you want to jump in, maybe you're looking at a table full of medications right now and you want to kind of figure it out, next steps. It is 7:30. I think we're going to take a break right now, Josh, for some weather. Dr. Nick will be back with more conversation and questions from listeners. 651-461-9226. We're back after this. And we are back. It is 7:35 on this last half of this hour. We dedicate every week to health. I want to say a healthy good morning to my friends who I spent an hour and more in the woods yesterday, my dear, sweet friends. And I also want to say hi this morning to Lori, who's listening in the West Metro. Dr. Nick. Nick, and I tried to say your name, and I just thought, the heck with it. I'm just going to say Dr. Nick. Is that how people come to your name?
Yeah, naming's kind of tough, so people just go with Dr. Nick.
Yeah, and you're a geriatrician. Is that geriatrician?
That's correct. And that doesn't mean I'm just an old doctor. I mean, I'm an old doctor who cares for seniors.
You know what? And my mom is a geriatric nurse practitioner by trade.
No kidding.
Yeah, yeah, honestly. She was really one of the first. In the 70s, she went to the University of Minnesota and became a nurse practitioner in nursing. She's a woman to behold. I'll just tell you that right now, Dr. Nick.
Well, God love her.
And, she is,
nurse
yes.
Nurse practitioners are dear to my heart, and they've filled this space that doctors have really kind of let become a vacuum over the years, and they're incredibly important partners in caring for seniors.
They really are. And, you know, I mentioned our phone number, 651-461-9226, and now that people have had a chance to listen a minute, now we're getting a lot of questions. So if you wouldn't mind, I'm just going to go through a couple of them and just see and see what your response is to them. This one right away, and thanks for texting, people, because we'll get to these as we can, is taking a different sleeping pill every night. For example, trazodone, magnesium. If you switch around, like maybe you take a Benadryl, then trazodone, then dopamine, D-O-X-E-P-I-N. I hate how these things are spelled. Is that harmful in the long run, this texter writes?
Well, let's get out of the trenches and go back up to the 10,000-foot view.
Okay.
Honestly, Susie, there is not a safe sleeping pill out there for seniors.
Oh.
I wish there was, but anything that is going to sedate you and put you to sleep as a senior is going to raise your risk for delirium, acute confusion, falls, fractures. So many, many seniors take sleeping pills. I just can't tell you that I can endorse any combination of any of them or any approach in a way that is safe. I can put you to sleep, but can I do that safely? Honestly, I don't think I can.
Wow.
And people do take that risk. I will say this, the higher the dose, obviously, and the more pills you're taking, the bigger the risk. So if it's really important for you to have that sense of security that I slept, because not sleeping is not terribly dangerous. But if it's super important, I would look at all the other medications to make sure we can lower that drug burden so that your sleeping pill at least is less risky when it's not taken with 10 other medications throughout the day.
That's good advice. I know a lot of people are curious about that. 651-461-9226. Let's take a call. Phyllis is calling this morning from Wisconsin. Where are you in Wisconsin, Phyllis?
Star Prairie, outside of New Richmond.
Okay. What is your question or comment for the doctor this morning?
Well, I am a pharmacist, and I know that the hospital I work at in Minneapolis, that if we see a patient with too many medications or we question what the counterindications are. We do have a program. We just talk to the hospitalist. They put in the request, and those patients are given a insurance-covered appointment with a pharmacist to go over all the medications, and then the pharmacist speaks with their physician.
All right. Thank you for that. I appreciate your jumping in with that, Phyllis. So that is good to know, Dr. Nick, that there are some stopgap measures in place in some places to jump in and catch it there.
Great to hear. And like I said before, I think engaging pharmacists as part of the partnership is super important. The only caveat I would say is, again, that consult needs to have a lot of context about you know, individual treatment targets for their blood pressure, for their diabetes, you know, what their real goals of care are when it comes to taking medication. So it shouldn't be a siloed approach. And what I'm hearing from this pharmacist is there's some integration with the hospital-based doctor. I would like to see that transition out to the primary care physician in the community, too.
You talked about silo. I kind of want to follow up with that because we've got more people on the phone and more questions, and I promise I'll get to them. But is there a way to force the unsiloing of things, or is there some benefit to keeping it siloed? What's the motivation on things being in a silo, and how hard would it be to open the doors and have everybody talk to each other?
We could do a couple hours on that.
Sorry.
The system is siloed because we don't really value an integrated whole person, you know, value-based approach. I mean, physicians and hospital systems are still hooked on the fee-for-service transactional healthcare system, and it's very tough to cut through that. And so I think that's really a policy decision. I will say this. We've got some nonprofit health plans in the Twin Cities here. And if you don't mind me mentioning them, UCare, Blue Cross, Medica, that they're aware of this, and mm-hmm. they are trying to help providers like myself and other health professionals on the delivery side migrate towards a value-based system where, you know, all this integration and a medication review would be valued in the new system. And so people could really take 45 minutes and sit down with families and go through the indication and efficacy and safety and risks of all their medications. So I think we're going to get there.
All right, good. 651-461-9226. Let's take Lewis. Lewis is calling from St. Cloud, Minnesota. Good morning. You're on the air with the doctor.
Good morning, Dr. Nick. I take over-the-counter vitamin D supplement. It says on the bottle that expires October 23. They will last until about February. I'm wondering if I should get a new bottle if they lose potency after October.
Thanks for the call.
You.
Yeah, thanks for calling. I think people tend to ask that. I mean, I'll let you answer. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's a little out of my wheelhouse. I'm not a pharmacist. But vitamin D can the evidence on whether it helps people is somewhat controversial, but it's and you can take too much of it, but generally it's a safe thing to do and might help with muscle and bone metabolism. I'm not an expert on expiration dates. I don't know how well that's studied. I will say this about over-the-counter health food products. They are not tightly regulated by the FDA, so it's really difficult for physicians to give advice about things like St. John's wort or melatonin or even some of the vitamins out there, because it's not the same as FDA approved medications. I don't know.
Yeah.
So our confidence is a little lower.
Yeah. And someone else asked that a bit earlier about, you know, can these things become, you know, expired and not. They asked about taking supplements, and what did you think of, what is your opinion, they say, on supplements, magnesium, calcium, fish oil, B complex. I know you said that's not your wheelhouse, so.
Yeah.
But that's
and there's been a little bit more evidence to, you know, help us give some advice on some of these things. Like fish oil has really fallen out of favor. A lot of folks still take it, but the cardiologists were really hot on it, and most of that data was related to some population health studies. But at any rate, let's move on.
Sure, sure.
I would like to talk about drug cascading a little bit.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, let's do that. And let's do, because it actually goes with this question. What are common medications that are prescribed and not often removed from one person's list, even though they might not be necessary? Let's talk about what is cascading.
So drug cascading is a good term for the listeners to take away from this talk. And what it refers to is Dr. A seeing you for some complaint checkup and uncover something and prescribes a medication which causes a side effect. Then Dr. A themselves on the next visit, or a different doctor in the other silo, sees the side effect and prescribes a new pill to treat that side effect. So a really good example would be, let's say, we've got an 85-year-old woman with mild memory problems living alone with very few health problems. So she's successful out there in the community. and she's found to have a little high blood pressure at her checkup. The doctor starts a drug called amlodipine, which has got good evidence to prevent heart attack and stroke. It's a right choice, but it does cause swelling in the ankles. And after being on it, her blood pressure comes down, but she comes back in with ankle edema or swelling. And the doctor's worried and sends her to the cardiologist, who works her up and says, "Oh, the heart looks pretty good, but you might have a little bit of heart failure. And we're going to put you on a water pill to treat that swelling in your ankles." Well, that works. It lowers her swelling in her ankles, but her blood pressure comes down a little bit, and she gets incontinent from having to go to the bathroom all the time from the water pill. So she goes to see the urologist, who then starts the medication to stop her bladder from contracting. That medication, oxybutynin, makes her confused, and she's actually even a little delusional now and thinks her son's stealing her money. And that worries everybody, and she's weak. She gets sent to the hospital and is very confused, and they give her an antipsychotic, Seroquel, or quetiapine, to treat her psychosis. So in a period of maybe 6 months here, she's gone from no medications to four different drugs and is a mess and never gets back home. That may sound a little hysterical, but trust me, that is happening every day in our community. And nobody's getting out of bed in the morning trying to harm this woman, but we're all participating in it.
Wow.
That's drug cascading.
That is amazing. I mean, just the way you told him, like, holy cow, but that's common, I suppose. So how do you you're talking about de-prescribing. So, I mean, what's the process by which you look at someone and say, okay, let's take a look at this, and what can we and what can't we do? And you know what? It is 7:46, and we have to take our last break of this hour. So we're going to answer that question, and we're also going to take any more questions and comments at 651-461-9226. We're back right after this. And we are back with the last segment of the big show. It is the Health Hour. We should come up with a better name. Don't you think, Josh, like a more snazzy name? What do you think?
I'm game for it. Whatever you can think of.
Well, people,
I'm drawing a blank right now on a Sunday morning.
I know. Health Hour. Well, we'll figure that out. We've only been on an hour. I mean, we've only been on a year. We have Dr. Nick on our news line for the last segment of the show. Dr. Nick, thanks for sticking with us. So many great texts and calls today. A lot of people like to ask about those supplements, and we'll just have to ask them that, you know, maybe a different doctor can talk sometime about supplements. But as we wrap up the last, like, 7 minutes here, are there thoughts that you wanted to make sure that you got out? I mean, if someone's listening right now and they're looking at a table, or they have their parents that have too many medications on a table, you know, what's your message to someone listening as they go about their day today?
I'd like to maybe send out that word deprescribing to folks who might be worried about their medication list. It's a new terminology. It hasn't been in healthcare jargon for decades, and probably there are physicians out there who still don't know what it means. And it really means having a process to, in an expert fashion, evaluate a medication list that typically results in a lower medication burden. And definitely can refocus on what medications are really of high value and which ones are not that important. I'd like to see that term actually maybe migrate to a new term that I call re-prescribing, where you rethink the whole list. And it does involve reducing, removing, and replacing medications, but occasionally resuming or starting some medications that are very important. A good example would be people who take blood thinners to prevent strokes. They're super important medications, and they do get stopped often out there because of concerns of falling and bleeding risks. And instead of stopping the anticoagulant, which I see happening a lot, and people are doing it with good intention because mom's falling over, how about stopping some of the other medications that might be making her fall? And then we can look at that risk benefit of the anticoagulation in a different way and get her back on it to help prevent that stroke that might be coming on. So I think re-prescribing and really rethinking that whole medication list is super important. It may be frustrating for the consumers out there to find a doc with the time to do it, but I would be intentional again about trying to find somebody and giving them the time to look through your list. And the training is still lacking. So I think we need our academic institutions out there and the medical schools, the training programs, to start really thinking about how to teach our prescribers not to just what to prescribe, but how to unwind some of these lists. And I don't think there's a class in medical school yet on this, but there should be and will be soon.
Texter writes at 651-461-9226, it helps my heart to hear the doctor's explanation about the cascading of meds. It sounds exactly like what happened with my mother in the last couple of years of her life. Before she passed away at 90, her occasion of not trusting us were continually blamed on dementia, and they said just it got worse and worse. And to hear you talk about this has been very helpful to understand maybe what was going on with her, because I do think is the benefit of re-prescribing that maybe even your loved one will feel better, will have a little more energy. You know, I mean, talk about the benefits of re-prescribing.
Oh, it's joyful to see people function, think, and feel better. And it's commonplace to do it. You just, it's complicated to get it right, but and taking the medication list from 10 or 15 drugs down to zero is the wrong thing to do. But getting it down to the three or four medications that are of high value is commonly associated with improved function and much better quality of life, and I think also improved mortality.
Yeah, right. And so if someone that you love, I mean, do you just say, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, you know, how many, let's, can we take a look at your situation? You know, are they, do you find that patients would be reluctant to that, or how would you be their advocate?
I'm not sure quite where to go with that.
I mean, you know what I mean? It's almost a, you know, you have to broach the topic. If you're worried about your loved one taking too many meds and they're not responsive, that's kind of...
You've got to get some doctor's attention.
Yeah.
And the right doctor is a primary care provider.
Okay.
And, you know, God love them. I mean, I did it for 13 years, but this is a difficult thing to do. So, again, carve time out, ask them to put some thought into it before the visit, and I think the results could be optimal.
So anybody listening, you can ask your own primary care doctor and say, I heard a program on WCCO talking about prescribing and deprescribing and re-prescribing. What can we do? Can we set an appointment up to look at what I'm taking?
Yes,
okay,
for sure. And you know, and again, the training might not be there. I have a lot of friends that are primary care physicians, and most of them could do this.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I think, but it's an unusual appointment on their schedule.
All right,
yeah,
listen.
Somebody come in and want that done.
Yeah. Listen, we're out of time, but thank you so much. I know you work with LifeSpark, LifeSpark. Okay, and you can answer those questions there at LifeSpark as well, I assume?
I certainly can.
All right, LifeSpark.com. If you have more questions, it is Dr. Nick with us on News Talk 830 WCCO. Make it a great day.